Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me just say that I feel very honored and very humbled to be with you as the first speaker of this very august conference, and to be with so many distinguished Canadians who have been either reborn or reincarnated to address issues that have not been addressed, at least in my sense, for some time in this country. And in this room are some of the leading intellectuals of this country, some of the great participants, tattered survivors of the constitutional wars. I look around and see Ken McRoberts. Ken McRoberts probably wrote better on the Quebec issue than any other person, and he was my guide. If Ken disagreed with me, I never said it. So anything I say wrong will be Ken's fault, but to be with people that I worked with on both sides of the table as discussing the great Quebec questions of my day. And I and a chancellor of the university, may I say I'm very proud of the university for engaging in this conversation today, and I am relying on the four panels and these highly talented people to solve the issues. I'm only going to give a few modest reflections from my perspective, having survived, at least in some respects, from the constitutional wars and been, and I say this without hesitation or without one bit of apology, probably overly engaged in this issue, because to me it was the central and core moral and political issue of our country. And probably over preoccupied me, my friend Patty Monahan, who was my advisor, constitutional advisor, brilliant constitutional scholar, might argue that, but actually I don't care, because it is something that I value so very, very deeply. I have been probably at over 100 conferences on the Quebec question. In the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. This is the first one of this century. And it's interesting, I think, that there are people that still care about this, that still have knowledge, that are gathered to trade their wisdom, and I congratulate the organizers in putting this together and putting it back on the public policy radar screen. As I said, there are many, many experts in this room, and you are going to determine, not me, if anybody cares about this issue anymore, or anybody thinks it should be discussed anymore, or whether we should just let it go away and not resurrect this beast, because there are many, many, many tattered corpses along the road in these discussions. So I thought from my own point of view, I might be able to share a few of my own reflections. As I said, I'll leave the solutions to you. But like all great discussions and great debates, at the core of this discussion, it seems to me, is one of values, of what we value as Canadians, what a Canadian is, what we want to share, what we don't want to share. And all of the rest is shaped by what people want, because the politicians will come back and reflect that in some way or other and institutionalize those values into a political movement. And I just want to reflect particularly for the younger people in the room today. Perhaps our new generation of people who will articulate this debate on both sides and bring new energy and passion to it. My first real engagement with Quebec was when I was 17 years old, and it was just the beginning of the Révolution Tranquille. And some of you will remember that. And I chose one summer after high school, I finished high school, to go to Quebec for the summer, to the little town of Trois-Pistoles. It's a beautiful little town on the south shore, east of Quebec City, near Rimouski. And there they ran a summer school for young Anglophones learning French, and at the same time, young Francophones learning English. So all of these people, unknown to each other, gathered in this beautiful little French-Canadian town, under the auspices of the University of Western Ontario, studying each other's language and culture, sitting on the lawn in front of the church, debating politics, listening to French Canadian poetry, music, going back and forth, falling in love, and this was very, very, very important. You had to fall in love with someone from a different language group. And it came back to me as a 17-year-old. When I came back from that summer in Quebec, that my world had been totally expanded, totally enriched, that I was lucky not to be fearful of a different culture, but I was a more whole and complete human being and Canadian, having had that very direct and personal experience. And it also seemed to me, if I was lucky enough to have it, wouldn't it be nice if everybody else can have it? Because it goes to the core, in many ways, of our Canadian experience. And I also came away with the view that if I was ever in power, I would pass a law that every Anglophone had to marry a Francophone and vice versa. That would have solved all of these bloody problems. Love solves all problems. I was never able to implement that law, but I still think it's a very good idea, and I commend it to Prime Minister Harper. So when I moved forward in my own life, and I told you about all these conferences, when I went on to University of Western Ontario, I went to a great conference organized at Laval University, and that's where I first met Prime Minister Mulroney, then a very active student, and he and a bunch of very, very talented Anglophones and Francophones put together a great conference at Laval discussing the future of the country. Don't forget, everything was heating up at this point. An awful lot of discussion, political activism, and things were moving very, very quickly. Again, a group of young people highly engaged with great leadership of the Prime Minister, and he made an indelible mark then, he still continues to make on this country, about putting together the diversity in this country and building understanding and a greater whole than the parts. When I went on to law school, we ended up with, some of you recall, the Robarts-Papin Commission on trying to reconstructure our confederation, see if there's any way we can, things we can do to build more understanding and accommodation. And I ended up chairing a group at the law school proposing we had all the solutions to the Quebec problem then. We had it all figured out, we gave it to them, and nobody agreed with us. But our proposals revolved around Senate reform in those days and how to use the Senate as a agency for national unity. Not that the substance matters that much with hindsight, but what does matter, I think, is the massive engagement of young people, and I'm only one of thousands in these great debates, because we cared passionately about this country. And on the other side of the wall, there were many Francophone young people the same age who cared about the issue in very, very different ways. But there was an engagement and there was a discussion. And so I went on to public life. I brought this deep, deep, deep passion and commitment and a realization these issues were not going to solve themselves on their own. And it was fundamental to my political belief, and Bernard Landry will remember this time as well as I do, that I believed passionately, it was important to create a Quebec City, Toronto, Ottawa axis. And that was not a particularly hard thing to do, frankly, based on some of the relationships at the time. Brian Mulroney I had known, and I knew his views, and I in most respects shared his views on the great national unity issues. And Robert Bourassa, who had just come back after coming back from the wilderness, was an old friend of mine as well. Our friendship developed when he came, when I was a lowly backbencher in London, Ontario. He came to speak at a fundraiser for me, and we developed a friendship that carried on until his death. But then when he came in, it was kind of a relief. After the PQ were defeated, we had an opportunity to move the country forward. And you'll recall, after the night of the so-called Long Knives or the Patriation in 1982, there was a sense that we might be able to knit this country together in some way that would satisfy all the parts. Recognizing on some debates there's no satisfying anybody. For the partisans, for the fundamentalists, for the heathens, you can never convince them of reason, and you can't even convince them that love or respect is a particularly valuable commodity. But for reasonable people, and this debate was always about finding the reasonable people in the middle, not catering to the extremes, we felt there was an opportunity to make this country whole, led by the Prime Minister. You recall I'm not going to go through 1982 and the Patriation. There's many people who were here then. It's been written about very, very widely, and it's been resurrected. As you know, there's a new book out by Ronnie Graham and a lot of others. And many interpretations on whether there was a humiliation, whether there was a gang up, or whether there was not. But the facts are, and the reality is, that it did happen, and it did move the constitutional process forward. And that is a reality. It was incomplete, in my view, and had I been there and I was not there, I think it was worth doing on balance. But one had to have the humility to recognize it was only part of the road. And we'll come back to Meech in a minute as the completion of that. But it would have, so we went on to work on these issues with Bourassa, the other premiers, with the Prime Minister, signed the Edmonton Declaration, as you will recall, that we would call the premiers together, and we would attempt to make the conditions appropriate to allow Quebec to be back into as a signatory. Not to solve all of the constitutional problems in this country, but enough to bring Quebec in so that we could then go on and address a number of outstanding issues that were still, and are still, bedevil this country to this day. I want to refer you back, particularly young people, to something that I happen to believe profoundly. And that is, what we were doing then was an extension of the principles articulated in the BNA Act. The BNA Act of 1867 was quite a source of genius in a whole bunch of ways. I had opportunity to reread the constitutional debates of Charlottetown and Quebec. Charlottetown, 1864, some of you may recall, someone said the major contribution of Upper Canada was to bring boatloads of liquor to keep the debates going. But when you read it, you'll read a view of Canada, of Macdonald, and another one of Cartier, one a centralist, one a decentralist, who were able to compromise for a higher set of purposes. It was the ultimate compromise in many ways in our constitution, in our history of our country. And if you articulate the themes that they were talking about and that brought this country together, the four original founding provinces, it was three things. Common security, the Fenians were coming across the border at the time. There was dream then of economic powerhouse, economic common union. We still have a little ways to go on that one, but we're working on it. And there was also a broader vision that of all of those players at that time, in 1867, 1864, saw a larger enterprise, a Canada that would go from sea onto sea, and we could create something great together based on the principles of compromise that were in the BNA Act of 1867. And so when you look at that act, and it was the best they could do at the time, there's no such thing as a perfect constitutional document, but a great step forward, and it was a document that articulated the diversity of this country, the respect for the partnership, and minority rights in both Upper and Lower Canada, for religion, for education. And this set the intellectual underpinnings for this country today, which is the most advanced multicultural nation in the world. We are seen as a model to the world, and I want to repeat, I believe that is because of the foundation, emotional, intellectual, and political, that came out of the BNA Act that respected the other side and were able to build on that with all the concessions and compromises that requires along the way. There was not a petty nationalistic view in that document. There was not a petty tribal view. There was a large view of Canada and a large view of the world. And I think that document alone is one of the most important in the history of our country. And then, of course, let me just briefly take you to Meech. I'm sure you're going to hit on Meech because that was another place that we were deeply involved with many of you on our constitutional team, the Richard Simeon. I think we assembled the finest constitutional team, David Cameron, people that ever assembled in the history of this country, because the resources of this province went to trying to keep this country together, and Meech was a vehicle at the time. When Meech was agreed on in 1987, and it wasn't easy, but it frankly wasn't that hard, it enjoyed enormous public support. It was extremely popular. I'm talking to the period after 1987, not to 1990. And what changed this entire country was the sign laws and the invocation of the notwithstanding clause. And don't forget the constitutional perfectionist Pierre Trudeau used the notwithstanding clause to get the 1982 patriation through. So there's no such thing as perfection. He compromised and made a number of mistakes in that patriation that came back and haunted us at Meech Lake. But that being said, it enjoyed very wide popular support until the invocation of the sign laws. I remember spending virtually an entire weekend on the phone with Bourassa at the time, again, a dear friend, dealing with what he perceived to be a political crisis, felt that if he did not use the notwithstanding clause, he could have massive social unrest. And many people will remember this, and I had to respect, and Robert said to me, and he said to me at the time, he said, David, he said, I understand where you're coming from. I said, it's going to turn the rest of the country totally off the accommodations of the Meech Lake Accord. And he said to me, I understand that. That's a risk I have to run, he said, but you have never faced anything like I have faced when one of your best friends was killed in the name of political insurrection in this country. I understand the fragility of this country, and he was a great believer in the social peace. Whether he was right or wrong is not the point, but it did dramatically change the mood in this country. And then we went to the final meeting of Meech in 1990. As you recall, we were limited by the rules that were set in the patriation. We had 3 years to do it. It was a mistake. If it had been 6 months, Meech would be the law of the land, in my opinion. There's certain unanimity provisions and a number of things that ended up in still shackling this country. Everything we did was to try to save that, and the Prime Minister, I think, was heroic. Some people blame him for doing that. There were mistakes along the way, but let me remind you that that was pretty much put together in 1990. Ontario, with the advice of a number of people in this room, made some historic compromises to bring Clyde Wells to the table. It's no secret that I blame Clyde Wells totally for the failure of that, and it was his vanity that tanked that agreement. Then when he pulled Newfoundland out of that of his previously passed agreement in that, because it wasn't that hard. It wasn't that hard, frankly, for us sitting at the table. I don't blame the critics. Critics are there to criticize. I don't blame people in opposition. They're there to oppose. I blame the people that have to put their pen on the piece of paper and make the decision. And it was obvious to me, and I think to others at the table, even people like the Western premiers who were under enormous pressure on Meech Lake for a variety of different reasons, that this was in the national interest and we would prevent a lot of problems going forward. This discussion, we've discussed this ad nauseum, and I kind of viewed it as sitting in a car and watching one of my children walk in front of the car into the traffic. And you know that child is going to be killed. You get out of there and you throw your body in front of that child to save it. It was that kind of desperate at the time. Clyde was so entranced with the attention he was getting and his own vanity that he could not bring himself to do that. I will not get into the details of how that happened or what happened. He agreed at the meeting, left, and then we all went down and spoke at the Newfoundland legislature, something that's never done in parliamentary democracy, but we did it just to try to bring him on side. It is a fact, I believe, that the death, not Meech Lake, the death of Meech Lake was one of the seminal events in the history of this country. It's totally aligned the politics. It's not unlike the death of Louis Riel. It realigned politics in the West. It was after that that the reform movement was started. It was after that that the Bloc was started in reaction to that. We saw the regionalization of politics at a national level. We saw a referendum where we almost lost the country. We saw a preoccupation with things that easily could have been solved and in some ways have been solved in non-constitutional ways or in different arrangements since that date. And it was predictable and understandable by people who knew just a little bit about this country. You didn't even have to be that smart to figure it out. But it is a fact, and we have witnessed that for the last 20 years. Now, is the issue settled? Who knows? There are some people say, you know, everything's quite calm right now and everything's the way it's supposed to be. So why worry about it? Well, that's what this conference is here to decide. So let me just conclude with a few miscellaneous ideas and reflections. Number one, I don't think we will ever be able to amend the Constitution. No one will ever risk what was risked at that time. It's one of those occasions, it's a once-in-a-lifetime occasion. You either get it right or you get it wrong. We got it wrong as a country, but here we are. So there's many, many other ways to move forward through administrative arrangements and many others, and I think a lot of people in this room will be able to discuss that far more knowledgeable than I am. But we also have made progress in recognition issues and a lot of other things. And so we can continue advance. It will be laborious, it will be difficult, but a country is never static, and constitutional arrangements and arrangements, intergovernmental arrangements, are never static. My second observation is separatism is dormant, perhaps today, but it is not dead and probably will never die. Anybody I know that tries to predict Quebec politics and the outcomes is wrong. They're wrong. This is a country, this is a province that embraced the union, the social credit at one point, the ADQ at another time, the Bloc at a different time. And now can you tell me one person in this room that predicted at the beginning of the election that the NDP would be a majority in Quebec? There isn't one person, honest person in the world that predicted that. And if that can happen, anything can happen. And it depends on who is articulating the values of the time. I don't write anybody off. And I also don't see, to be perfectly honest, the great voices in this debate. I don't, no disrespect, but my dear friend Bernard Landry and the René Lévesque, these were great voices, not that I agreed with, as were the Pierre Trudeaus and the Brian Mulroney's and many, many others who are articulating the values of this country or the values of Quebec in relation to the rest of the country. Pick one or the other. But I don't see that kind of debate going on today. Maybe people are avoiding it purposely, Maybe people don't care about it the way that they used to, and maybe it's not seen as a political necessity in order to keep this country together. I am hoping there are some people in this room, particularly the young people, that care enough about this to start articulating those values that are important in keeping a country together. There are many other obvious things happening. I don't need to tell you about the shift to English all across the country, across the world. That is a fact. It is the international language of commerce, and language has been always the centerpiece of this debate in Quebec. And there's been a whole bunch of things happening with the Cassidy Poe of unilingual hockey coach, whether it's the auditor general. In the old days, you know, if you had a unilingual English-speaking hockey coach in the Canadians, you get 20,000 people out. Get 300 people out today is not exactly, I could have got more people myself in a protest against anybody at any time on any subject. So the question is it less active today, or could it be resurrected? I am one of those that believes this debate could flare up at any time, and we must be enormously respectful of Quebec's desire to protect its own culture and identity, particularly in the view of the new demographics, where there's massive number of allophones moving in, where the birth rates are lower, and things are happening, and that this, shall we say, paranoia can be used, coupled with a sense of humiliation, that humiliation is always dragged up through the light of the long knives in 1982, to flare something, because the circumstances be right. Because the reality is, the power in this country is shifting. It used to be Ontario and Quebec, and is moving more and more to the resource producers now, and we've established, and I think the Prime Minister understands, you don't need Quebec to form a majority anymore. They used to be genuflected to in a political sense that they aren't today. And if there's a sense of diminution of that power, there may be a reaction to that in some way to come back and play an important role. So there are many, many issues at stake here. You are going to spend a lot of time discussing them. I hope out of this we can find voices that believe in this country. There's always flexibility in how those values are put together, how these two great cultures, the Anglophone and the Francophone, two great languages, are put together in a country that works unbelievably well. And so I end my remarks where I started. This debate is about values. This debate is about how we feel each other, about each other, and whether we think we add to each other's lives, both politically and in a personal sense. I would argue our relationship is the wellspring of the country we most value. That is tolerant, we respect its diversity, and we're all able to compromise and get along together. We're a country that has not settled the big issues with war in recent years, whether it's war of independence or war of civil war. We've settled it with understanding and arrangements and respect. Respect for the majority, respect for the minority. And so I would say that our relationship with Quebec is the cornerstone of our national identity. And if you give up on Quebec, you give up on Canada. Thank you.